Well, we are reinvigorating the TechPinions podcast. We've thought a lot about how we can bring something sort of new, and we know we've got a big following with our site, and people like the range of contributors that we have, so we thought it'd be good to just get any number of different contributors at any different time to come on and discuss the latest and greatest happenings within the industry. I think many of our readers know that most of us have backgrounds as analysts. I do. Colleagues Bob O'Donnell as well, and my father, Tim Beharin, who many I may be familiar with. But I'll let you guys, just so people get used to your voices and who you are, just say, you know, your name and anything a little about yourself, and then we'll jump right into a broader discussion on Apple, smartphones, tablets, new categories, and more.
This is Tim Beharin, president of Creative Strategies, and as Ben mentioned, Ben's my son, and we work together, and I've been covering the PC and tech industry for about 35 years.
And this is Bob O'Donnell, and I'm the founder and chief analyst at Technalysis Research, and I've been an analyst for about 15 years, spent a long time at IDC, also covering the tech business in a lot of different ways.
We got a good group. So, you know, let's jump into the most recent news. And I think weaving into broader discussions of mobile will be useful. But you know, let's talk about Apple. You know, all of us, we have, you know, as long as we've been in the industry, obviously you as well, Dad, even much, much longer, Apple's been a core focus of all of our research and analysis. So, you know, let's discuss how, you know, let's discuss the earnings at the high bid. I don't want to go through, you know, the stocks, but we don't need to go through any of these sort of broader financial details. But, you know, let's talk about the phone segment for a bit, the smartphone segment. So Apple beat on phones. I think there was only a few analysts who were on the higher range of these estimates. But you know, 43 isn't bad. I wouldn't be shocked if it's, again, not quite as high going into the next quarter, since that's typically little worse of a quarter. But what was interesting was, I think that the estimates being somewhat lower discounted what was happening in emerging markets. And, you know, as I've been watching and studying China, it's becoming quite clear that the iPhone there has a real growing presence as a strong market for the iPhone. And a lot of the data and charts that we have in install base there are just, you know, significant. So, you know, I'm not terribly surprised. I think emerging markets really did help fuel kind of the beat, if you will, on smartphones. But I think this is an interesting changing landscape that we're having with phones, where we're getting, you know, hundreds of millions of people now coming into the market for the first time with a lower cost device, but yet Apple's sticking with this strategy that appears to be still working. I mean, they pointed out that the strength of iPhone sales for the 4S were significant, that, you know, 64%, I think it was, or 62% are switching from Android in emerging markets to the 4S. So as an entry-level product, that seems to be working, even though it's not the latest.
I lost Ben.
Yeah. Ben, we lost you for a sec.
We lost you.
All right, am I back?
You are.
Yeah.
Where'd you lose me?
Just a second ago. You were talking about 64%, and then I forget exactly the
word. Then it dropped.
And then it...
Okay. Yeah, I was saying that the number of people, you know, first-time buyers to the iPhone 4S are 62-64%, I forget the number, but for the most part, we're switching from Android. So as even though it's a later generation product, it's actually still working as a entry-level product for them, bringing people into their ecosystem, despite it not being the lowest cost out there. So it's interesting how this tiered strategy is working for them in the midst of, you know, again, this changing landscape where the bulk are coming in a lower priced device. But, you know, any other observations that you guys had just on just kind of Apple's and the phone space particular?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to argue that really people who are buying into Apple now are buying into the ecosystem, because let's be honest, from a hardware perspective, they have kind of fallen behind, especially in markets like China, where phablets and large phones are becoming increasingly important. Apple, from that spec perspective, is actually further behind than they've been in a while. But the ecosystem is still very important. So I think what you're finding in a lot of places is people are continuing to buy into the Apple ecosystem, and that gives them, you know, a lot of opportunity. The challenge, of course, is that a lot of these developing markets, they're primarily only selling to the very wealthiest of those markets, and every part around the world, there is a group of wealthy individuals. The question becomes, how does Apple extend that into, you know, more of the upper middle class in, say, a tier two or tier three city in China? That, to me, is the big question mark.
Well, this is Tim Beharin. I think that's a big challenge for everybody. And I think the one thing to think about with Apple, though, is that Apple really is looking at two things. They're not really going into market share as much. They're focused on really creating the best product with the best content and service. Let me start that. Apple is working on the best product with the best content ecosystem as well as services. And they're also very concerned about providing value to the shareholders. And that's a little bit different. When you hear from Samsung and these guys, you know, and even Google and the Android stuff, you very seldom hear about shareholder value. You really hear really about market share. And that's an important distinction. And I think that's something that is the big driver behind Apple. And as Bob just said, that the ecosystem is what's really driving people to them. I think they're going to be challenged to some degree in some of the other emerging markets where really low cost is. Smartphones drive it. But what's interesting is that we actually see smartphones that exist today and even cheap tablets is driving demand for more powerful things. And as some of these emerging markets gain, you know, what we call middle class or, you know, start gaining financial strength, you're going to see them go to products that are a bit cheap, a bit more expensive, not a lot, but enough, but because they want more power and they want more computing capabilities.
Well, that and the brand value is also important. In a lot of countries around the world, of course, Apple is a very strong luxury brand, and it's an aspirational brand. And a lot of people want to have an Apple device because it makes them, you know, makes them feel important, makes their friends think they're, you know, really succeeding if they've got that. And so there is that value of that notion of an aspirational brand. But again, the challenge that we're going to also run into is I believe we're going to see a peak to the smartphone market much sooner than a lot of other folks are. I mean, don't get me wrong. We've got several years of growth. But I think there does come a point when most people who want a smartphone are going to have a smartphone. And then we move into the question of what's the refresh cycle like and how often will people refresh? I mean, this is the challenge we have in the U.S. market, right? U.S. market is saturated. Everybody who wants a smartphone has one. And we've seen, and you know, whether it's Apple or any vendor, sales are starting to pretty much stabilize. And so the question is, how do people choose to upgrade when they choose to upgrade? Apple's got a great opportunity coming forward because they're going to have a big screen iPhone. There's going to be a huge pent-up demand for that. They're going to get a big pop from that one, unquestionably. But then, and you know, just as we're seeing this in the iPad space, once you get to a product that's pretty good and matches all the needs that most people have, you know, the need to upgrade does, I think, reduce over time. And that's some of the challenges I think Apple's starting to see in the iPad market.
Well, yeah. And so let's a few more points on phones I think are interesting, and then we'll talk about the iPad space. But, you know, I don't know if you saw the ARM deck that came up that they used for their investor call. But, you know, I always like their sort of breakdown of where they see the different tiers going, and they sort of showed this slide for the opportunity in mobile in 2018. And what they said was that, you know, mid-range phones represent about, you know, an annual shipment in that year, 2018, of about 550 million phones, and premium being 350. And, you know, I think that sort of feels about right. I mean, premium could be a little bit higher. But it's interesting to look at, you know, just mid-range and premium is you know, is almost 900 million then in terms of annual shipments. And that despite what Apple does with later generation products, whether they bring in a current generation at a lower price or premium, that's still a big a big size opportunity for them to integrate with it. You know, I think it's got to be optimism based on, you know, what you said, Bob, that they do have a high brand. Even if they get aggressive in the mid tier, it's still going to be something that people will aspire for. So it still seems to think, you know, I would still, you know, maintain there's a lot of optimism for the iPhone, you know, going forward for the next, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is. I think they're going to really get a big hit from the large screen, because having started to use some of the larger screen phones on other platforms, Windows phone and Android, you know, once you get used to that larger size, I got to be honest with you, when you go back to an iPhone, it feels kind of like a toy. I mean, it's really small.
Yeah.
And so I think there's no question they're going to see a big pop from that larger screen phone.
Let's be clear, though. I don't think Apple's doing a phablet-like product. Most of the stuff coming from the suppliers is suggesting something in the 4.7, 4.8 range. But I think that actually goes around a design question. And Steve was pretty adamant about this, as is Johnny Ives, that the experience of using a smartphone needs to be done on one hand.
Yeah.
And like you, Bob, I've been playing with the various, you know, 5.5 and 6-inch things, and you can't do that with one hand. In fact, I was trying this on a 5-inch the other day, and it was a challenge. Now, again, guys with big hands, it's probably not an issue, but, you know, women and, you know, like myself, a 4.7 probably is about the max I could do in using it in a one-hand operation. And I think that that's actually a very big part of that design goal. And what's interesting about that is I actually think it becomes much more of a sweet spot of that larger phone. I think Apple's design sense will start being real clear with something in that space. And then that'll carry over to, I think you might be seeing actually guys that were doing 5 inches actually come down.
Or you mean 5.5 or phablet sizes come down?
5.5, phablet size, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're going to see a combination of all of the above. I mean, I agree with you, Tim. I think that the one-handed operation thing is very important. And having dropped a 6-inch phone and attempting to use it one-handed, I can definitely vouch for that. But, you know, it will be interesting to see. I think we will see 4.7. If they were to do a 5.5 or a 5.2 or something a little bit bigger, I think there would be an interesting market.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, my big question is, what do they do on screen resolution?
Yeah. Well, I think.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I've thought about this question of, you know, the bigger screen, and you know, if they were to make my logic had always been, if they were going to make a 5.5 or around that, I guess, it would make actually a lot of sense in emerging markets. I to be honest with you, I don't think it would sell anywhere near the 4-ish size, you know, for higher end 4-inch phones to the American market. But I do think that the, you know, in China, possibly India and others, you know, a bigger size could be quite a big seller. And so I'd consider it more of a regional strategic play than anything else.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. And the thing is, if, as you pointed out at the beginning, if Apple's growth is going to be dependent upon growth in these other regions, then that would theoretically drive the need for that larger phone even more. Because, you know, U.S. is only a portion of their market, an increasingly small portion of their market. So.
Agreed. So let's move on to the iPad. I mean, this, I don't want to sit and you know, defend the iPad or tablet category as much. I mean, I'm as bullish as any, but, you know, I think there's certainly a lot of dynamics about this that don't necessarily get talked about quite as much. You know, one thing, you know, we came across some research from Global Web Index that I thought was interesting of tablet owners that indicated that 50% of existing tablet owners share their tablet with at least one other person, and a third share it with two or more people. And that, to me, you know, I had always thought, you know, is the tablet more of a communal or a personal device? And it certainly varies, you know, per person. But you always hear these stories, you know, I've got my tablet, I share it with my kids, they play it, or, you know, and that, to me, says something about the space, not necessarily where it's going, but where it is right now. And I think that could shed a lot of insight into why we're seeing these somewhat halt in the market, if you will, because it changes the dynamic from a one per person to a one or two per home, meaning that as long as you've got a couple of these in the home, that's enough for the time being. You don't see the need to have one of these per person. And at the price point, you know, it makes sense that that's the case. And so I think part of the iPad's problem in that it's still one, people are still kind of, still a very immature industry, I think. I mean, even though it has grown extremely fast, I think it's still relatively immature in where people are figuring out what it is, what does it mean to me. You know, you've pointed this out before, Bob, that, you know, bigger phones will clearly impact tablets, and I think we've already seen that. But I think, you know, the tablet itself, as people figure this out and try to figure out what it means, this idea that it's shared or communal or one per home or one or two per home kind of, I think, feeds the, yeah, I don't know if I need to get another one or we need to add another one to this home. This one or two is serving my family well. That, I think, is playing into this sort of tablet dynamic and the iPad dynamic as well.
Yeah.
Well, it also deals with the question of what kind of a refresh rate would you get on this too?
Exactly.
You know, initially Apple had this kind of in a 2 year cycle, like the iPhone. But you know, my iPad mini is a little over a year and a half old. And they would have to do something pretty spectacular for me to actually want to jump up to the next iPad mini,
right?
Let's say.
I feel the same with the Air. I mean, you know.
Yeah. That's the thing. And if you look at it, I mean, I think the one thing we have to look at with a critical eye in this last quarter is, hey, you know, the Air is sort of the penultimate 9.7-inch format, right? They pretty much pieces right on it, other than a fingerprint reader, but who cares? You know, so, and yet, even despite that, we're not seeing this huge rapid rise. So to me, I think we have hit a little bit of a plateau in terms of the capabilities. And that refresh cycle is also impacting the number per family. Because if you think about it, right, in the early days, you got the first iPad. Then another one came out, and it was cool enough and better enough, like with the Retina display. You're like, well, I got to get that one. And then you're like, well, this first one is still good. I'll hand it down to the kids or what have you. But and so you ended up with a couple per family. And then they're like, okay, until I have some unbelievably compelling reason to move to the next one, yeah, I'm good with what I've got.
Yeah. You know, real quick, Bob, what, you know, I'd be curious in having you do a little, talk a little bit more about iPad in enterprise and potentially upside there, because while I think what we're talking about is a very consumer-centric thing, and I think all of those points are important in understanding how consumers are purchasing and using these things, there's obviously other channels for Apple being, you know, commercial and education. And, you know, the iPad, I think, still has a lot of upside in business. You know, again, not enough that I think it's going to dramatically change the S-curve currently of the iPad, but enough that I think you'll continue to fuel more of these, you know, of their sales regularly. But I know you talk to IT folk much more than we do. So what's the sense there of, I guess, optimism in terms of how you're viewing the iPad as it goes to enterprise?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. And in fact, in my own forecast of the tablet market, I think commercial tablet is where we're going to see most of the growth. I think most of the consumer market is pretty much flat in terms of tablets. But commercial tablet growth is happening. Now, some of that is because, believe it or not, a few people are starting to buy Windows tablets. But it's also because people are starting to use... excuse me.
I don't believe it, Bob. I'm just
people
kidding.
Are starting I'm just to kidding. Use... I know, it's all right. They're starting to use iPads in the enterprise. But the thing to remember, there's a couple of points to remember. IT moves very slowly.
Yeah.
They don't make changes, right? I mean, 25% of the market. I just did a survey of a whole bunch of businesses. 25% of the market is still using Windows XP, for gosh sakes, right? Even after the April 8th cutoff date. So IT moves very slowly. iPads are, for them, a revolutionary kind of thing. They're still catching up from the introduction of the device. It's not like consumers who adapt to these things quickly. There's also a real lack of tools to adequately manage these devices, to adequately deliver corporate applications onto these devices. Most of the work that's being done with iPads is people who've gone out and made the effort to write custom iOS apps for them. Well, guess what? Most IT shops don't have a whole bunch of iOS programmers on their payroll because The guys who are good at that are working for startups doing all kinds of other apps. So you've got some challenges in deploying these things in business. The other thing is, unfortunately, you know, there was that phenomena, say, a year after the iPad came out when everybody said, oh, tablets are going to replace PCs. Right. And, you know, and that whole thing, of course, never did play out the way a lot of people thought. And so now there's a little bit of a, yeah, you know what, it's not like it is. And there's still people kind of reacting to that experience. What people are still figuring out, exactly to your point, Ben, it's early on, is how does the tablet appropriately fit into enterprise? How do I use it along with my PC or my Mac and my smartphone? How do I get these things to work together? There's very few people who I think, other than you, and I know you're the shining example, who are willing to completely give up their PC, and I think even you, Ben, are using Macs and PCs on a regular basis, yeah, not just an iPad.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you think about it, in business, right, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who said, yep, I'm willing to give everything up and just use an iPad. You just can't do that.
Right.
So you've got to recognize, all right, how do I balance this out? How do I do the things that are good or better on a tablet form factor, at the same time use it in conjunction with the stuff that, hey, I still need to use on a regular basis on a PC or a Mac?
Yeah. Well, and one of the things I think is important to point out about enterprises is one, exactly what you said. I think you've got to drop the expectation that this is a PC replacement for those who are stationary, meaning that they're sitting at desks for long periods of time and or moving from office to office space and need, you know, and are in a fixed position. So I was on a panel at an enterprise conference of a few months ago with the CIO of Chevron. And so they're deploying over 30,000 iOS devices, more than 50% of those being tablets, but they're going to field workers. These are people who walk around all day and do surveys and do checkpoints and do, you know, validation and check, you know, and it's a paper replacement, if you will. But they are adding software for unique deployments for them. But these are going on in oil rigs. You're seeing them all over the place, you know, here in California with construction workers where it's replacing blueprints. People are able to send them, you know, job information for their site. But again, these are people who are standing, you know, they're mobile. Yeah. They're not sitting down. And that to me, the field worker, it is really an interesting spot where I think the tablet's got a tremendous amount of upside, and that's where we're seeing that differentiated use case between, well, do I need to give this person a PC or a tablet, is sort of indicating if they're on their feet all day, and that's a lot of people running across these different verticals, then it does make sense that you equip them and empower them with a tablet versus somebody who's sitting at a desk all day.
Yeah, and a lot of those people didn't have a PC in the first place.
Right.
So this is their first, you know, work computing device. So that's the other thing to be aware of. But yeah, absolutely. You know, where I think there is a lot of opportunity, and it's going to still take a couple years to settle through a lot of these issues.
Well, one other thing to think about is that at this point, Apple still is dominant with tablets in the enterprise. The numbers that Tim gave us yesterday, you know, 95% of Fortune 500 have tablets. 90% of activations of enterprise tablets are based on the iPad. So right now they're in a dominant role, but I'm doing a column for tomorrow that really talks about the fact that, you know, if Apple decides to even innovate around this, I mean, these are just with plain tablets.
Right.
But we think that they could do something really interesting here and make it really, really difficult. And one example I'm giving is that, you know, you've got the thing like the Surface from Microsoft and some of these other hybrids. But I don't know, Bob, if you've played with them or Ben, but, you know, they're not really well designed. They're heavy. The batteries is an issue. And most of the ones that I've used, the keyboards are weak at best.
Yeah.
What if Apple actually does something really radical here, where they innovate around sleek design, lightness, and, you know, even if they don't do their own keyboard, they cut a deal with somebody, let's say, and bring a keyboard so it really is clean, like the Zag does. You know, you could see Apple end up with a position where they fundamentally own the enterprise and make it really difficult for the rest of the guys. I mean, Android's making no inroads at all because of security issues.
Right.
But, and, Bob, you mentioned that Microsoft is selling some into enterprise. But, you know, I think Apple has an opportunity to innovate here and fundamentally keep the competition at bay.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Tim. I mean, this brings up a bigger question about Apple, which is, you know, when is the last time Apple specifically did a product for business? I mean, you don't think of them. I mean, you could argue the Mac Pro is, and some of the servers, but, you know, they've got out of the server business a long time ago, and it took them a long time to update Mac Pro. But other than that, you know, they haven't really had a business focus. Have they done well in business in spite of that? Yes. But, you know, the fact that I know they hired a bunch of corporate sales guys not too long ago, and they're clearly making some inroads there, but they haven't really done anything on the product side. So I agree with you. If they were to do something like that, it could be very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we want to keep these short, so you know, let's cut it off there, and I think it gives us the opportunity to keep doing many of these. So good talking with you guys, and TechPinions listeners, feel free to give us any feedback on the podcast. We're going to obviously cover a range of topics more than Apple. You read our site, we talk about wearables, Internet of Things, you know, TVs, digital homes, beyond. So we'll talk about a range of dynamics and different things in the industry. And so check back for that. We'll have the link for iTunes on there as well. And so any feedback is always appreciated. And Bob and Dad, good talking to you guys, and we'll talk to you guys later.